A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a huge topic, decolonization. It's messy, often violent, but absolutely fundamental to understanding the world map as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not just recounting dates here. We're trying to understand why things are the way they are now, using the work of historian Dane Kennedy as our guide.
Yeah, and it's so important to move past that sort of simplified story we sometimes get. You know, the idea that empires just politely faded away.
Right.
Our mission really is to grapple with the sheer complexity of it all. This was a massive transformation over, what, 3 decades?
Yeah.
And it completely reshaped global politics, economics, social structures, things we're still navigating.
Absolutely. And you, our listeners, should really care about this because, honestly, understanding decolonization is kind of the key to unlocking so many contemporary issues.
For sure.
If you're trying to make sense of conflicts, say in the DR Congo, or persistent economic inequalities, that whole resource curse idea, or even why borders in places like South Sudan seem so fragile,
mm-hmm.
you have to look back at how this massive shift happened, mostly between 1945 and 1975. So our guide through this is Dane Kennedy. He's a distinguished historian, really specialized in British imperial history.
Yeah, and what makes Kennedy's perspective so valuable, I think, is that he avoids simplistic narratives. He doesn't just look at the colonized people's actions.
Okay.
His authority comes from really digging deep, synthesizing research from, you know, both the big imperial centers, London, Paris, and from the colonies themselves, places like Accra or Algiers. It gives him this incredibly rounded view.
So he sees it less as a one-way street, you know, just resistance leading to freedom, and more as what he calls a dialectical process.
Yeah.
Can you unpack that term a bit for us? What does that mean here?
Right. Think of it like a constant push and pull, almost like a global chess game, maybe. Every move made by a nationalist leader in, say, Ghana or Indonesia was being shaped or countered or sometimes undermined by decisions being made back in London or Paris. Financial crises, military strategies, internal politics there. It all fed back.
So action and reaction.
Exactly. It's this continuous interplay. Kennedy's point is that it wasn't just about colonial resistance. It was that complex dynamic. Actions in the colonies met strategies, sometimes damage control from the imperial powers trying desperately to hold on to influence even as formal control slipped away.
Got it. Okay, so let's get to the core argument then.
Yeah.
What's the central thesis Kennedy is putting forward?
Well, fundamentally, he argues that decolonization wasn't this neat, tidy, or even inevitable handover of power.
Mm-hmm.
He describes it as a, and this is his phrase, negotiated, contested, and often violent process. And it wasn't just two sides. You had multiple actors involved. Dying empires, sure, but also determined nationalist movements, the emerging Cold War superpowers throwing their weight around, even new international bodies like the UN.
And the core insight, the thing that really shifts your thinking, is this paradox he highlights.
Yes.
That decolonization was, at the same time, this moment of genuine political liberation.
Yes.
The end of formal foreign rule,
mm-hmm.
but also a period that immediately created new problems, new forms of dependency, new conflicts, new inequalities.
Exactly. That's the crucial point. Gaining political independence didn't automatically mean economic freedom or social autonomy.
Right.
Think about it. New nations often inherited state structures that were designed purely for colonial extraction, not for serving the people. They got borders drawn on maps in Europe that ignored ethnic realities on the ground. And their economies were often still completely tied to the old colonial power.
So flags changed, but the underlying structures
often remained or morphed into new forms of dependency. And that's why the consequences are so deep and lasting.
Okay, let's turn to the history itself. Kennedy makes a strong case that World War II was the killer blow, the fatal wound to the whole imperial system. Why WWII specifically, more so than World War I, for instance?
Well, it was a confluence of things, really. First, the hypocrisy became almost impossible to ignore.
Also,
you had the Allied powers fighting Nazi Germany and fascist Italy under the banner of liberty, democracy, self-determination,
mm-hmm.
while simultaneously holding on to vast empires where those principles absolutely did not apply. Nationalist leaders like Nehru in India jumped all over that contradiction.
Makes sense.
Then there was the stark reality of military vulnerability. This was huge. The fall of Singapore to the Japanese in 1942, a major European power just routed by an Asian one.
Yeah, that must have been a shockwave.
Absolutely. It shattered that long-held myth of inherent Western or white invincibility. It showed it could be done. and that emboldened resistance movements everywhere.
And the third factor?
Money, pure and simple. Britain and France might have been on the winning side, but they were financially wrecked, deep in debt, economy shattered. They just didn't have the resources, or frankly, the political will back home, to keep pouring money and troops into maintaining these massive, costly overseas empires, especially when facing increasingly organized resistance.
The capacity to rule just evaporated.
Pretty much. And crucially, leaders in the colonies saw this weakness. They immediately started using the Allies' own wartime rhetoric, like the Atlantic Charter's promise of self-determination as leverage. You said it, now live up to it.
So that crisis, that weakness, opened the door for the actual paths to freedom. And Kennedy stresses this wasn't one single movement. It was a whole spectrum of struggles, right?
Absolutely. The way it unfolded depended massively on local conditions. A key factor was often the number of European settlers who considered the colony home and, you know, how economically vital the colony was perceived to be.
You give some examples?
Yeah, look at the contrast. Take Ghana, which was the Gold Coast. Kwame Nkrumah was a brilliant strategist. He used mass political mobilization, getting huge numbers of people involved in what he called positive action, essentially nonviolent resistance. Big protests, boycotts, coordinated strikes. The goal was to make the colony ungovernable, peacefully. And because Ghana didn't have a huge European settler population fighting to stay,
the British could negotiate.
Exactly. They could negotiate an exit that, crucially, still protected their main economic interests. So Ghana gets independence in 1957 through that route.
Okay, now contrast that with Algeria.
Oh, completely different story. Algeria was seen by France, especially by the over 1 million French settlers living there, not just as a colony, but as part of France itself.
So negotiation was off the table.
Totally. The settlers, the Pinoirs, were never going to accept leaving. The French state backed them up. So the war led by the National Liberation Front, the FLN, from 54 to 62, it was incredibly brutal.
We're talking extreme violence.
Yes, on both sides. Terrorism by the FLN, systematic torture and repression by the French military. It wasn't a negotiation. It was a vicious fight for survival that nearly tore France apart. It actually caused a constitutional crisis in Paris and brought Charles de Gaulle back to power to sort it out. Violence was absolutely central to how that new Algerian state was forged.
And this wasn't all happening in a vacuum. The wider world was watching, intervening. Kennedy mentions the Bandung Conference in 1955. Why was that significant?
Bandung was huge. You had leaders from newly independent nations across Asia and Africa coming together. It was the birthplace of the non-aligned movement, meaning they were explicitly saying, look, we just got rid of one set of masters. We're not about to sign up with either of the new superpowers, the U.S. or the Soviet Union. They were trying to carve out their own independent path in the Cold War world. It made decolonization a truly global political force.
So faced with all this, the cost, the resistance, the international pressure, the old imperial powers realized they couldn't just hold on indefinitely.
Yeah.
But they didn't just give up.
No, not at all. They tried to manage the exit. The goal shifted from direct rule to finding ways to preserve influence and protect their economic and strategic interests without the burden of formal political control.
This is where the idea of neocolonialism comes in, right?
Uh-huh. Precisely. Neocolonialism is essentially that. Maintaining control through other means. Economic leverage, cultural ties, political manipulation, sometimes military agreements. Charles de Gaulle in France was a master of this, creating the France Afrique system to maintain French influence and corporate interests across much of West Africa, even after formal independence. It looked like a retreat, but it was really a strategic transformation of power.
And that attempt to control things, even during the exit, leads us straight into the Cold War complications. The Congo crisis is often cited as a key example here.
Oh, the Congo! It's such a tragic illustration of how decolonization could be derailed. Belgium basically just dropped the colony into independence in 1960 with almost no preparation. Huge power vacuum.
And Patrice Lumumba.
Lumumba, the first prime minister, was charismatic, nationalist. He wanted a truly independent, unified Congo, free from lingering Belgian influence, and crucially, non-aligned in the Cold War.
But that wasn't allowed to happen.
No. His push for real autonomy immediately got caught up in internal rivalries, yes, but also massive international meddling. The U.S. and the Soviet Union saw the Congo's immense mineral wealth, uranium, cobalt, and its strategic location as vital Cold War prizes.
So they interfered.
Aggressively. Proxy forces, covert operations. Lumumba was seen as potentially leaning towards the Soviets, or at least as unpredictable. His overthrow and eventual assassination, backed by Western intelligence agencies and Belgian interests, sent a chilling message across Africa.
What was the message?
That trying to achieve real, untethered independence, stepping outside the Cold War boxes, was incredibly dangerous. It could get you killed. The chaos and violence that followed in the Congo for decades were a direct result of that derailed decolonization.
Okay, stepping back from the specifics, what are the big overarching themes Kennedy pulls out? The core ideas that really define this whole era and arguably still shape our world?
Well, the first one, we've touched on it, is just the sheer complexity and variability. There's no single story of decolonization.
Right. Ghana is not, Algeria is not India.
Exactly. The bloody chaos of India's partition, the negotiated path in parts of West Africa, the long grinding wars in places like Vietnam or Angola, it shows that how it happened depended entirely on local context, contingency, who was involved, no single cause, no single outcome.
Okay, theme one, complexity. What's next?
Theme two is the persistence of colonial legacies. This is absolutely critical for understanding today. Formal independence, raising a new flag, it often just papered over the old problem.
Like the borders,
yes. Drawn by Europeans, often cutting across ethnic groups and lumping rivals together. Those arbitrary lines became incredibly sticky, causing internal conflict down the line. Look at Nigeria, Biafra, or the Sudans. And inherited economic structures designed for extraction legal systems, they persisted.
Creating ongoing instability and dependency.
Precisely. Which leads to the third theme. The centrality of violence. Kennedy is clear. Violence wasn't just an unfortunate side effect in many cases, especially where you had large settler populations determined to stay, or where the colony had major strategic value. Think Algeria, Kenya, Vietnam. Violence was often fundamental to breaking the old power structure and forging the new political order. It wasn't pretty, but it was often necessary from the perspective of the liberation movements.
And that leaves scars, presumably.
Deep scars. Psychological, cultural, political trauma. You see it reflected powerfully in the writings of thinkers like Frantz Fanon, who analyzed the effects of violence, particularly in the Algerian context.
Let's pull out a few specific ideas or phrases from Kennedy that really encapsulate these complex arguments, things that stick with you.
Okay. Well, the central paradox itself is probably the most powerful. Decolonization was, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, less a moment of pure liberation than a process of transformation that created new forms of dependency, even as it ended formal colonial rule.
That really reframes the whole thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't just an endpoint.
Not at all. And connected to that is his point about the strategy of the empires themselves. They sought, again paraphrasing, to transform their influence into new forms that would preserve their interests while adapting to changing international circumstances.
So less a change of heart, more a pragmatic adaptation to keep the benefits without the costs of direct rule.
You could certainly argue that was often the primary driver, yes.
Now, perhaps the most profound one for me is about the global system that emerged after decolonization.
Yes. The point about the international system itself.
He says it embedded within it many of the inequalities and hierarchies that had characterized the colonial world, even as it proclaimed universal principles of sovereignty and equality.
That's the fundamental contradiction we still live with, isn't it? We have the UN, where technically every state has a vote, supposed sovereign equality. But then you look at the global economic structures, trade rules set by powerful nations, the dynamics of international debt, the way resource extraction still often benefits foreign corporations more than local populations. The old hierarchies persist in new clothes.
So bringing this all together.
Yeah.
What does this mean for you, the listener, trying to make sense of the world? How can Kennedy's insights be applied?
Well, several ways. First, when you're looking at economic development, especially in the global South, his framework on neocolonialism is incredibly useful.
Right.
It helps explain things like the resource curse, why countries rich in natural resources often stay poor. It's because political independence didn't automatically break those exploitative economic links. Control often just shifted from colonial governments to multinational corporations or international financial institutions, still operating within structures that favor the wealthy nations.
Okay, so it helps analyze economic reality. Mm-hmm. What else?
Second, understanding global conflicts. This is huge. When you read about civil wars or instability, say in parts of Africa or Asia, resist the easy narrative of ancient tribal hatreds.
Mm-hmm.
More often than not, as Kennedy's work suggests, these are modern problems with roots in the colonial era. Those arbitrary borders we talked about, the centralized, often authoritarian state structures inherited from colonial rulers that weren't designed for inclusive governance. These are major drivers of conflict today.
So look for the colonial fingerprints.
Always. And finally, perhaps most importantly, it encourages critical thinking.
How so?
It pushes you to question the dominant narratives, especially the neat transfer of power story often told from the perspective of the former colonizers. You need to actively seek out perspectives from the formerly colonized world itself to get anything close to a full picture of why global events unfold the way they do. Be skeptical of simple explanations.
That's a great point. For me, the final takeaway, what really struck me going through this, was just the sheer variability and contingency of it all. Nothing felt inevitable. The fact that Ghana could follow a relatively constitutional path while Algeria descended into such horror, It shows how much depended on specific circumstances, personalities, the presence of settlers, the calculations of the empires. History wasn't following some grand script.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, the most crucial lesson, the real paradigm shift Kennedy offers, is understanding that decolonization isn't really a past event. It's not something neatly confined to the 20th century that we've moved on from.
You mean its effects are ongoing?
Exactly. It's an ongoing process. The political instability, the economic dependencies, the cultural mixing and clashes, the psychological legacies, these are still actively shaping our present and will continue to shape our future. If you want to understand the 21st century, you have to recognize that we are still living within the unfolding consequences of that massive global transformation.
A powerful thought to end on. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.